I know things you never see. You never see someone taking a shit while running at full speed.
Come on, Key, get rid of some of them turds in the shit box.
Welcome to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, Rab himself. All right, so welcome everybody to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, your host, Rab himself. We got an exciting episode for you today. One of my really, really good friends, Kirk Gardner, is on the episode. Kirk is also known as Colt Darling. So if you want to check out this episode, watch us on YouTube at Rab Himself Videos or SoundCloud at Bathroom Break Podcast. We're on social media on Twitter at Chris Rab, on Instagram at Rab underscore himself, and also on Instagram at Bathroom Break Podcast. We've got a really fun episode today planned. It's planned. It may not be good, but it's planned that way. So I wanted to welcome Colt Darling, a.k.a. Kirk Gardner, a.k.a. Colt Darling, a.k.a. Kirk Gardner, to the show.
Loody doo. How you doing, butter thumb?
Yeah. Hello, darling. How you doing?
Hello, darling.
It's been a long time. How's your new love? Dude, that's something like we always call each other, and every time, like, even if we talked 10 minutes ago, that's what comes up. Hello, darling. How you doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, Conway Twitty.
Yeah, it's hilarious because in my phone, it's Kirk Gardner, but for some reason, when it comes up on the car phone, it just says Colt Darling.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the best thing ever. There are many people in this world that think Colt Darling should never resurface, but you and I keep the...
it's alive.
Keep that alive.
And by many people, you mean your wife, right?
She's one.
She doesn't
one
like
of the
it.
People.
Yeah, she's not a fan, and I don't blame her because Colt Darling is a creeper. It's like this mustachio gentleman.
It's a beautiful mustache.
I mean, though. Look, I fell in love the moment I gazed into his eyes, but I'm just saying, you
and
know, I
could
see why a woman might be a little nervous by a creepy dude like that.
A little taken aback by his charm.
Yeah.
You know, he does have a certain,
that must be it.
Say quoi, you know what I mean? Brings about certain things. And ladies, they're not used to feeling the way they feel when they encounter Colt Darling, and it brings up these emotions in them that they're not too comfortable with.
They all these tingles that they ain't ready for.
Right. It's super. They're like, what is this?
So give us an idea of how the Colt Darling character came about.
Well, I was going through a horrible divorce, and I was working at Starbucks, and I needed a Halloween costume. So I had that wicked beard for a while, and I was like, screw it, dude, I'm just going to shave off my beard and keep this mustache. And I have this auburn beauty of a mustache that I can grow where I could twist the ends out and, like, be totally – and this is way before Hipster Town.
Yeah.
Like,
this is
way before anyone really – like, I'm not saying I pioneered it. Other people had mustaches.
Yeah, my dad's had one since 1960.
Correct. And it's a glorious one as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But – you came over to see me, and I put, like, the garters on my arms, and I was like, I'm an old-timey bartender, because I was a barista at Starbucks, and I was like, and I named myself Colt, and I was like, and you and I were just talking outside, like, on my break or whatever, and I was like, yeah, my name's Colt, because you were like, I can't get over that mustache.
Yeah, it was, like, it was glorious.
Like, that's the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, my name's Colt, and you went, Colt Darling. And I was like, that's it.
Yeah, somehow that last name, it just rang true with Colt.
The gods sent it down to you.
Yeah.
And it just came out of your mouth. And then we were, and then we just kept going with it. And I was like, yeah, and did we start with the rock star thing?
Yeah, like, I mean, I think, like, there was jokes of, like, obviously the mustache sort of looked porn star-ish.
Right.
Sort of like... Yeah. Rock star, sort of country star, sort of...
Country star, but then you were like Christian rock star, or ex-porn star turned Christian rock
singer.
Yeah. That's what the final finale of a hymn was. And then we made that, like, we started writing songs for him. Like, we would just
instantly.
Go...
Immediately. As could be expected.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and then, but none of the songs were Christian rock whatsoever.
What do you mean? Like the one kitchen sink wasn't really Christian?
No, when you talk about your mother leaving her cunt rag in the kitchen sink again.
Yeah.
None of the songs, and that
not
was
very heavenly.
No, that was the other beautiful part of it, was that it's just nothing made sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
and then I'm going through my closets and stuff looking, because I used to keep that bag of wardrobe stuff, like I'd cut off jean shorts.
Oh,
and stuff
yeah.
Whenever we were filming stuff,
some nice nut huggers that you had to throw on there.
Where the pockets would come out the bottom, like that's how great they were. Like just any shirt or anything we were about to throw out, I just kept. Like I have so many button up shirts.
This looks
sleeves.
Like Colt Darling would wear. Let's hang on to that.
And then I found that that American flag shirt at my dad's. It's from like 1972.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he like wore it to Woodstock.
I mean, and that's when I feel like, even though you had the mustache, Colt was there, Darling came into the picture. When he was really born and it really happened was when that shirt was put on.
That shirt.
That American flag shirt is like, man, this guy just is Colt Darling.
It was glorious. That was a really good time. That was a lot of fun. Like a
and it
lot
was.
Of fun.
And I feel like we talked in that like hillbilly accent.
It
for
got
like
everybody
2 years because of it.
And we still do it.
Yeah. I mean, we do now, but I mean, like we like didn't break that accent for like two years.
And it's just you can't even explain where it comes from. It's just like some.
You get on the phone with like any friend, and they're like, "Why are we talking like hillbilly?" He's like, "I don't even know."
And even Mitchell said he's like, "I can't stop doing the Colt Darling voice, man." It just is contagious, like everybody does it. It really is. It just pulls you in.
Yeah,
you know? It takes you long for that ride. You know, you just and then not a care in the world. You know.
So so one of the first tracks that you laid down was Buttered Thumbs,
mm-hmm.
And wait, where did that come from?
I think originally Brandon.
Yeah,
Brandon was like. Was it
Brandon DiCamillo?
Brandon DiCamillo did. Yeah. Was it on Viva La Bam?
No, it was on Hot Dog Casserole.
Hot Dog Casserole, and well, he was like, "Ooh,
we're
I'm gonna
shooting
sweep.
These skits," and he just comes in and pulls that out. And I remember you and me and Marcus looking at each other like, "What? Did he say buttered thumb?"
He said, "I'm gonna like hit you with my buttered thumb or something that." And I was like.
You're like, what the fuck is that? I mean, that's another gem out of Brandon DiCamillo's mind. Is that guy's just the most hilarious person, and his brain works differently than everybody's.
Anybody I've ever met.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, he's just coming up with stuff like that, and you're like, what the hell's a buttered thumb?
And we got on it. We were laughing about that, and then we were recording over at dude's house, you were just like, all right, you would always give me a premise. Then we would like let Dan just play music and I just came up with words.
Yeah.
And he would just play this thing and I was just like, you know, I was just like, I'm gonna butter my thumb.
It's like, wow, this funky like
gonna
little
butter my
track.
Thumb.
Yeah.
I'm gonna butter my thumb and the other one. And that one, we didn't write any of those lyrics down. I just did it.
Yeah, it
was
just
totally
made
off the cuff.
Sense.
We recorded it and that was it.
Yeah, it's like you get the butter out of the fridge and let it get salt. I'm like, where the hell is he going with this? But it's just hilarious. I mean, it's so funny like that Brandon's the type of guy that'll say one line like that. And then we just had fun with that forever. Yeah. You know, like, say, you know, he has like instantly quotable stuff.
Yeah.
And you walk away from that and it's just like, I remember, and literally to this day, Marcus, who is the camera guy and one of the producers for the Hot Dog Casserole stuff. I mean, he edited, he was a one man band, but to this day we send each other messages and it's like, all right, buttered thumbs. And or buttered doves, which to me was funny because that came from you.
Yeah,
in the middle of that hillbilly skit, we're doing this skit, and you just like
I
you,
forgot
you
about
just
that.
Like I we were saying buttered thumbs so much at that time, and you're doing that hillbilly thing, and then you're like one of Brandon's lackeys, like on the bank.
I totally forgot
while we're
about
fishing,
that.
Until just and you're like, hey, hey! You're like buttered doves, and we're like, what? Some doves, and then that became a thing, and then it's like these like dripping wet doves covered in butter, and I don't know why. It's such an inside joke, but But that's another thing, that we do the sign-off, Marcus and I, every time we talk.
Butter doves. And I forgot about the hillbilly skit.
Yeah, so it's so funny, because, yeah, we'll put up the hillbilly skit on the YouTube page, just to kind of, you know, those days were just funny, because we were, you know, it was after Viva La Bam, and I was trying to sort out what the heck I was going to do, and just wanting to get creative and film some more skits, because back in the CKY days, that's how it all started, was just filming these little skits, and then obviously, you know, Bam skateboarding and all that was a big part of why there was a camera around, but jumping off the roof and people were doing that crazy stuff too, but the little skits were like an awesome outlet as well, and kind of lost that as Jackass and Viva La Bam were happening. It just became all about like stunts and pranks and this, and yeah, you lost the skit part of it. And so I just really had this like dying need to do little skits, and for better or worse or whatever, I remember when I did them, people go, "Rab, why are you doing these skits? Like, just shit on something." And you're like, "Ah, fuck, man, I kind of want to do these skits. That just, even if they're stupid, they're fun to do." And so those like days when we were just shooting the hot dog stuff, it was just funny, man. It's a contagious kind of thing of just a lot of laughter and just nonsense, and everybody just putting their two cents in about what they thought was funny, and just a lot of riffing, you know, like a lot of like improv sort of stuff happening, like, yeah, where Buttered Doves comes about, Brandon saying Buttered Thumbs, which led to those things, and then each person is just like blowing each other away with the funny shit they're coming up with. And I think what's so cool is like you put like a bin of costumes out, and all of a sudden there's this new character that Kirk's, you know, that you got going on with the hillbilly, and then there's something that Gabe's doing with the male model thing, and yeah, then there's this, you know, and it's like it just becomes fun, like just so fun to, like, you know, literally you have like $20 worth of, you know, Goodwill stuff in a bin, and, yeah, and you're like, damn, let's have fun, yeah, with that.
And you're with a bunch of people that are like-minded, and you don't, and some of them we had rough outlines for, and other ones were like, let's just shoot that.
Yeah, let's just start
just
going.
Shoot what you said.
You put that outfit on, all of a sudden you're that guy, now let's make that.
Right. And it didn't matter. And yeah, and there's tons of stuff that's just never, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We never did anything with it, but
yeah,
like, the laughter, like the true, like, deep soul laughter that we would have while doing that, and the fun you have. I mean, it was fun for us, I guess. Like, that's not a lot of, maybe some people don't think that's fun, but I'm like, that,
yeah,
was some of the most fun we've ever had, is like filming that stuff with your friends, just being a complete moron, like just acting like the fool all over everything. And it was, not a lot of people get to say that they can do shit like that, and they've done shit like that, and we've done it a bunch of times, and we still like just bullshit and laugh about, like,
yeah,
that stuff. And Colt Darling was just like, I mean, we recorded like an LP, like,
yeah,
we took,
well,
it,
well, full EP. There's four songs that are good, like,
yeah,
I mean, you know, that's you know, I guess speculative, like, you know, it's up to you, it's opinion if you think it's good. I think it's incredible. but there's four songs. I'll put them up on YouTube as well. I have Buttered Thumbs up,
and
there
I have
now,
at Colt Darling on Twitter.
Yeah,
and if I get enough followers, I'll start tweeting again.
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah,
care,
yeah.
There's,
yeah,
only,
I'll,
I think, like four.
Get
tweets
the band back
again,
together,
dude,
man.
Let's do it. Pull
but
it in.
Yeah, no, it's funny because that band like led to some of the most fun times too. Like sitting in that, you know, in our buddy's like basement and doing those songs and just. And being like, damn, okay, we need to do one about ladies from the 80s. And then that becomes a thing. And then it's like, well, what about this kind of thing? And then sometimes you just push the button and start talking, and then it turns into a song, like the,
yeah,
Downtown Julie Brown. Just like, we're just farting around, and then it just becomes that. But that Colt Darling character was so fun, you know, mustachio dude with this American flag thing. And And that brings up the sponsors for the Bathroom Break podcast. Our first sponsor is the Mustache Shield. This 1876 Mustache Shield was patented by Virgil A. Gates. The invention was designed to keep facial hair out of the way when eating and drinking. And it's a perfect sponsor for the Cult Darling episode. You'll have to get a look at this picture, but it's just this, you know, random like thing that loops over your ears and covers your mustache while you're eating. I know since you've had a mustache, that has got to be like, it's like a perfect thing. Like, how weird is it? Cause I have, you know, I have a beard now, and how weird is it when you just try and take a sip out of a glass of water, it just pours all down. There's always a piece of a burger in there.
It's just par for the course, part of the territory. But Mr. Gates here decided, nah, not for me. I'm going to make this mustache and facial hair shield that wraps around your ears. I ain't having it.
Nope.
And the thing is like, they did invent scissors. They had scissors before this was invented. So you could trim around your mouth as to not. But if you wanted a true manly mustache of the times, it had to curl into your like upper lip. And you had to be able to use your bottom lip to you know, caress.
Yeah, and there's always got to be like a nice yellow tint along the mouth line. Like, oh, this boy's had a mustache for a while.
For quite some time.
And clearly he doesn't have a mustache shield.
No. And I think it would come in handy smoking. Back in the day, like either pipe smoking or tobacco, you know, type of tobacco.
How weird would you look if you had that thing on, though? You know, you just come in like you're in some fancy restaurant, like, oh, man, who brought this guy?
Yeah.
And you're like, hold on.
I wonder if they had sponsors on it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, brought to you by H.R. Joff and stuff. Like, you know, like, a way to keep the hair out of your food. That's right. No more risky hairs getting into your champagne glass. Please enjoy Mr. Gates's new hair protector.
Protect yourself with Mr. Gates' mustache shield.
We also have snake oil that for everything that is.
Yeah, of course, because who the hell else would be selling a mustache shield?
Absolutely.
With some snake oil sales.
There's that guy that's just carting that shit. I have the thing for you.
Yeah.
It's garlic and olive oil. The Italians made it.
Yeah. Our Bathroom Break podcast is also brought to you by the Revolver Camera. This Colt 38 small camera automatically takes a picture when you pull the trigger. And I thought, you know what? A Colt 38 is probably pretty perfect for the Colt Darling episode as well. And thanks to our sponsor, the Revolver Camera, it's pretty ridiculous. It looks like a legit gun.
Yeah.
Pointed at your face. Mm-hmm. Like, I think as kids you're taught, like, don't point the gun at someone's face, but that's what I'm trying to do to get the picture.
Correct.
And apparently that's supposed to be comforting.
How are you supposed to shoot?
While you're modeling off your mustache shield.
Yeah. You get shot in the face with my nice Colt camera.
Yeah, it just shoots you right in the face here. So obviously we talked a little bit about how the Colt Darling character came about, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how we met. I mean, we met a little bit prior to the Viva La Bam days.
Yes.
But mainly, you know, like we had met through a friend of ours.
You want me to tell the story of as my accord?
Yeah.
So Gabe and I have known each other since we were like 13, 14. We worked together down the shore. And then...
And Gabe is the guy that that I wrote Borrowed Happiness with.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Gabe was like, hey, I just started working production. I've been working production in Philadelphia for like a year. And Philadelphia is a small production community, right? So I was working for this one production house, and then I just started doing freelance, and Gabe was like, hey man, come up visit me at Chippensburg. And by the way, my roommate, this guy I become really good friends with, is this dude Chris Rabb. And I'm like, oh, Rabb, why do I know? He's like Rabb himself from the thing. I was like, oh yeah, that dude's fucking hilarious, I love that guy. Like all right. And I was like, all right, we'll come up. And then we hung out when you guys had that apartment near the football fields.
Yeah.
Right? And that was just, I think I got gangrene from wrestling somebody on the wet carpet.
Yeah, like, that sounds like par for the
course. And you guys like poured A1 sauce in a pair of tighty whities and let it harden so it looked like shit in underwear. And then like when the only girls that were like halfway good looking came over, you threw it into the ceiling fan and it hit this one girl right in the face. And she freaked out and left. And I was like, there goes the only good looking girls at Chippensburg.
Yeah.
Like, fuck them. Like,
whatever, we're ready
yeah.
to drink.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we just like would get shit house drunk. From what I recall, we had a great weekend. That was a fantastic time. Mm-hmm. And I gave you a ride home. I gave you a ride back from Shippensburg because you had to start, I think it was a Turbo Negro episode of Viva La Bam.
Yeah.
And you were like, and we had just met, just hung out that time. It was like, you know, you were like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Like, hey, dude, nice to meet you type of thing. But you're like, oh, I'll get a ride with you. And then I dropped you off at Ape and Phil's house, and I, on the ride back, I was like, yeah, dude, I work production. Like, just let them know if they need anything. You were like, yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. And I was like, he's not saying anything to anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you were just, you know, which is
yeah, because you know that mode of, like, for some reason, it's like this, like, private club, and you're like, I don't want to promise people that I can
right.
do things. Because so many people would say that stuff, like, dude, get me on the show, and blah, blah, blah. Like, all these years of Jackass where
right.
people, get me on that show. I'm like, I'm just trying to get myself on the show. I don't yeah. know who the fuck you are, you know? yeah, so I remember you saying that, and I'm just kind of, yeah, sure, just blowing it off.
So I drop you off, and you walk up the driveway, and now, like, I know where even Phil's house is. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I leave. I get a call that night from another buddy that's like, hey, they need people for this show. And it was Viva La Bam. And they're like, can you start tomorrow? And I was like, I'll be there first thing.
Yeah.
And then I'm there and I'm standing in the driveway doing whatever, like PA stuff. And you came walking up. And I remember you, this is my recollection of it. Now, it may be different for you, but you like look at me and you're like, oh, hey, what's up, dude? And I'm like, yo, what's up, man? And then you're like, yeah, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I was kind of like, dude, what the fuck are you doing here? I didn't get you the job.
And I go, oh, I just thought I'd hang out. And you were like, your face like kind of dropped. And
yeah.
you're like, yeah, you like, yeah, I don't think you could do that. Like, that's what you said
yeah.
to me. You're like,
it was weird. I'm like, here's this dude I just kind of partied with over the weekend. Thinking like, wait, what? You can't just do that?
And I knew in your head, you'd be like, shit, he knows where the house is and now he's standing here.
Yeah.
Oh, what did I do?
And I was
do?
Like, oh, like, man, this dude a weirdo.
Yeah.
You know?
And then I was just like, just kidding, dude. I got hired like last night. And you were like, oh, cool. And then you just walked
yeah,
back up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You just immediately were like, oh, cool. And then you just like walked up to the.
Yeah, because I didn't, I had no idea. And but then it was like rad that it was like, oh, okay, well, this dude is a buddy of my friend and. Okay, he's on the show now,
yeah.
you know, and who knew we would be friends all these years later. But,
right.
But I think, you know, it was funny because that was just the beginning of that crazy ride of Viva La Bam.
Yeah.
And that's what's cool is that you came on, you know, started as like this PA and then get to a point of being the field producer or whatever. And you're like legitimately... somehow, even though you were drunk, you might have been drunker than us, but I don't know. I mean, we were all pretty crazy, but somehow you were running the ship, you know, like while we're out there doing it. And I always have a memory of, you know, we were insane. So we were like literally insane, partying, crazy. And on top of the partying, it was like just adrenaline rush, jumping off houses, you know, flipping four-wheelers into cars and whatever was going on. And it got to a point where it was just party, 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 crazy filming, party, crazy, you know. And then, I would just not show up to set and stuff at times because, like, it would be like, Rab, you got to be here at 8 a.m. And then I'll sit there till, like, 2 in the afternoon. And then they're like, okay, we're ready to film. And I'm like... what? I'm bored. I'm ready to go hunt. Like, I'm not even in the mode anymore. Like,
right.
It got to a weird point because on the CKY stuff, it was all, we were all a bunch of friends.
Right.
And so we were filming and it was like, yo, we have a mission. Come over. We're filming something. We're doing that. And you're like, you're amped for it. And then you do it.
Right.
And then Jackass was similar to that and started to get more produced a little bit. And then by Viva La Bam, it was so produced that it was like, well, get them all to come over here and sit around. And then when we need Brandon, we'll get Brandon. And when we need Dunn, we'll get Dunn. And then when we need Rab, we'll get. And it got to a point where it was tough because you're like, yo, I was psyched when I got here.
Right.
And then y'all killed my buzz. And then I'm just sitting here like, with my thumb up my ass, like, what we're not going to film with me? Okay. But you can't go anywhere. Because, you know, and so like, sitting around doing that. So I kind of got wise to that and was like, fuck it, I'm not going, right. You know? And then I just like would like get drunk the night before party and be like, I'll go whenever they need me there. And then you got appointed to being the guy to come get me.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, Kirk, we need you to go get Rab because he's not answering and he needs to be here for this thing. And so I'm at my house and you come over, like knock on the door, like, and you're trying, like, it's funny because like when we party like maniacs. And then when you're at work, you're like trying to be professional, yeah. And you're like putting on that, like, I got to be professional, yeah. Face. Like Mark Hanna does it too, where, yeah. Like he's like a roadie dude for the band. And obviously Hanna's not just roadie. He's in a bunch,
yeah.
Of this stuff too.
Hanna's
he's
a
fucking
staple.
One of the most hilarious dudes you'll ever meet in your life.
Honest
like,
to God.
Literally. Probably one of the funniest people in the world.
And a great laugh.
Yeah, yeah. And just a talented dude. He's an, yeah. Awesome drummer. And, yeah. He's, and like, you know, so, but he's like that too. Then like he goes into work mode and you're like, oh, there's work, Hanna.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then there's work, Kirk. And then like, whoa, work, Kirk. But so there's like, you know, work, Kirk. And he's over here like knocking on the door like, hey, Mr. Rab, I need you to get to. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, get in here.
Yeah.
You're not going to work. We got to smoke these bongs before,
yep.
We go. We got to go. We got here. Let's have a beer. And you're like, no, shit, dude. We really got to get over there. Like, we got to get over there. They're telling me like, and then they're blowing up your phone. Like,
yeah.
Where are you guys? What's happening? And we're just sitting in there like partying, like, like having beers, smoking bongs. Like, yeah. No, we're not going anywhere just yet.
Yeah.
You know? And it became that. I remember, like, they always set you over because for some reason you could get me over there.
You,
it might take some manipulation.
Brandon.
But, yeah.
Like, my saving grace those last few seasons was the fact, because we did party so much that I kind of fell out of the graces of, like, the executives and
that
stuff.
Yeah.
So, but, like, because my thing was in the beginning was it was just, okay, I worked my ass off and I got promoted and then I got promoted again. And then it got to the point and I'd be like, you know, it was like a family, right?
Yeah.
And we all partied after we were done shooting. And then we wake up the next day and go shoot. But then I got to the point where I could basically drink with you guys on set,
yeah.
Which was bad.
Yeah.
Because like I was like getting paid and stuff, and you're like, and I got to this like, fuck it, I don't care. I'm like, and it was like I was like skating this line between being like a field producer for the show, and then but like one of the saving graces was that you, Brandon, Dunn was like on his own thing, and like, but you and Brandon in particular would only come to set when I came to get you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or if I called you, you would answer the phone. So they were like, well, we fucking need him.
Yeah, because like, they'll put somebody else on that job and we just wouldn't answer.
You would not, like, you would never answer it, but you're like me. And I specifically remember the day when I came to your house and it was like right before I started being like, fuck it too.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Rab, look, they really need you over there. And you were like, all right. And I was like, no, dude, come on. Like, they need you like now. Like, they have this thing. You were like, yep. And then you're like, you, and I'm like, no, I can't, dude. I'm like, we gotta go. And you're okay.
And then you just slowly
putting
work
on a sock.
Yeah.
And then
come
walk
on in here. And
walk
then before
the
you
house.
Know it, you're all stoned
in
there, like,
just sitting in there
shit.
With you, like,
I totally blew it. They're not. He's not coming.
And then we'd show up an hour later, and they look at me, and I'll be like, Boom.
I got him.
He's
like,
here.
And then they're like, are you high?
Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. Like, so, to a point where then you got, like, I think it was a different job, but you got that nickname Bong Water because you were like.
That was years before.
Yeah.
That was like way before. I had long hair down there.
He's
that was
Bong
like,
Water.
Yeah. And then I was like, can you just call me BW?
Yeah. It's like, so I'm trying to make a good impression on this director. It's like, shut up, Bong Water.
Yeah. They're like, just shut up, dude. Oh,
but yeah, no, I mean, a lot of awesome memories from the Viva La Bam days, and like,
wouldn't
I was
trade
just
it
thinking,
for anything.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, what are some of the episodes that you remember that were funny, or does it blur together like it does for me, like,
Like, you're like, I remember, like, Treetop Casino when Brandon was being, like, Fast Eddie.
Fast Eddie was fantastic. Because Fast Eddie Savage
was this dude that was, like, paying people to sniff their underwear around here, like, yes. back when we were younger, remember?
Yeah,
it was all, like, news. Action News yeah, or something, yeah. like, oh, Fast Eddie Savage, he's Uncle Eddie. Don't let him talk to your little kids because he just wants their poop-stained underwear yeah. so he can sniff them.
More at 11.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
it's like,
and that's part of the genius of Brandon is he would pull these obscure things out of reality
yeah.
and come up with this character like, oh, I'm Fast Eddie. And to like us, it's even funnier because there was this Fast Eddie guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And meanwhile, he's like, ah, Fast Eddie's Casino, Treetop Casino. Yeah, let's do it. You know yeah, what I yeah. mean? And he just yeah. like took it to this whole other level. And but no, like if we could sit here and talk for 4 hours about like once you say something, it'll remind us of something else and another yeah. story. But one of my favorite stories was when you got hypnotized in Vegas that didn't even make it
oh, yeah,
onto
yeah,
the
yeah.
show. But I thought I was gonna die.
Like just from what? From laughing.
From laughing so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah.
I was standing behind a camera in the aisle, right? And like Ape and Phil were sitting right there and like the rest of the cast is in the crowd. And I'm like camera op because I did everything. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
so I'm like camera opping from like the aisle. And you're up on stage with this dude, and he hypnotized you, and you're doing this Elvis thing, like where you're. He told.
Dude, that shit was crazy because I never really believed in hypnosis, and then but I went up there with the intention of, look, I'm gonna do exactly what this guy says. I don't give a shit if I end up naked on the stage,
because right.
who cares? It's gonna be funny.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna do exactly what the guy says, and then see where it goes. And I just went up, and then he was like, okay, like. Take some deep breaths. So you start taking all these deep breaths and then you do this and then like you feel like you fell asleep.
Right.
Like I felt like, oh, I did all these breaths, sort of like a meditation thing, but then you just felt like I fell asleep. And then when I fell asleep, I had this dream of Elvis and I had this dream of these other things that were going on. And then all of a sudden, like, I almost fell off of the stage at one point.
Yeah, you were right at the front.
And like I started to, and then I that was when this haze came. I'm like, what the fuck? Because I was like, oh my God. And then I saw this whole crowd. And then I was like, what? Like, and I was like so confused, like, because I was like asleep
yeah.
in my head. You know, and then all of a sudden there's this whole crowd there and it's like this fuzzy ass, like, you know, like it's like your eyes are out of focus and yeah. it's like all these people and then people are laughing at me and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and then like, you know, and then like this guy's like, oh, trying to get me and like help me. And then I think I kind of went back into more of a hypnosis because he did some shit.
Yeah.
And then I'm back in that. And then I like woke up. And all I remember is like coming off the stage and it's like dark in this little area of the stage and
we all surround
everybody was right there like, yeah. yo, dude. So I was like, what
yeah.
the hell?
You literally looked like you just woke up.
Yeah.
And I was like, cause I went over to him, I'm like, dude, what do you remember? Like what?
Yeah.
And you were like, I don't really know. You were like, I'm like, do you remember doing this? And you were like, it's kind of coming back to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was this weird, like, dream-like state where right. I, like when you first wake up and you're trying to remember what your dreams were.
Right.
Like, it was like that. And then everybody told me everything that I did.
Yeah.
So then I started to try to piece it back together, like, as if I remembered. But I didn't remember anything. And then I watched the tape of it. And then that solidified, oh, okay, now I get that. But it was weird because it was like watching a tape of your dreams.
Right.
You know, and it was like...
It was like, yeah. I was on the floor. I may have been dehydrated. I may have drank too much.
Yeah, the night before,
whatever.
And I was close to death.
But I was on the floor holding my sides to the point where I couldn't film anymore.
Yeah.
And I couldn't move. And I'm like, thank God this was a static shot. Like, it was just like a wide, like, static shot of the thing. And I was on the floor and Troy, like, comes over and looks at me and I'm like, I can't. And he was laughing too. But I was like, I was like, dude, I can't even move. Like, I can't move. When you snatched the microphone out of that kid's hand, because he made you fight the other Elvis over who was the real Elvis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were like, hey, what kind of car do I drive? And he said, like, a 67. You were like, it's a 57 or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I don't remember exactly
yeah.
what you said, but I was like, oh my God, because watching you go through all that and you had this like swagger about you the
yeah,
whole
like,
time.
So I watched the video and it's like so confident that I'm Elvis.
You
that
were.
That is ridiculous.
100%.
And I get off, and you know, like, I get off the stage, and you know, like, Phil Margera, Bam's dad, is like, the biggest Elvis fan there is. We grew up with that.
Right.
From when I was 7 years old, I had Elvis around me all the time because Phil was the biggest
fan
there
was.
That's
what you tapped into up there. Yeah.
And, like, I knew everything because I watched all the movies. Like, we sit with Phil and watch these movies. I hear all the records, all these things. And when I get off, he's like, Rabbit, where did you get that Elvis voice? And I'm like, I don't know, Phil. I think because of all the stuff that I watched with you. And he's like, oh my God, it sounded like Elvis. And I was like, and he was all like excited that he was at like the next Elvis.
That was really
concert.
Good, right?
Yeah. Just shaking his head. But it was funny to kind of experience that. That's hilarious.
That's one of my, I mean, besides the after show antics and traveling, like, I mean, that was a trip to Vegas. I mean, Brazil.
Yeah.
Crazy, like Mexico.
Oh yeah,
nuts.
Yeah.
Like
that Mexico town was like the middle of nowhere. It was just like school buses were the people's houses. It was like insane.
That was like one of our contacts, like down there. That was his parents, like little ranchero.
Man,
and we went out there, and it was like, and we had. That's when we invited the Dutsons. The Dutsons invited themselves to Vegas.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
they just showed up at Vegas, and then we invited them.
They knew something was going down.
Yeah.
Those dudes are hilarious,
they
too.
Are.
The Dudesons are fucking insane,
man.
Yeah, and even still, like...
I made it into their credits.
Yuka and those dudes.
Yarpe.
And, yeah.
Yuka and Yarpe.
Yarno. Yeah. Yarno. They just do insane stuff, you know?
He picked up a desert toothbrush and started brushing his teeth with it. Like, in the middle of a Mexican desert, we found a toothbrush, and he picked it up. And I couldn't. I was like, God, no. Then he sat on the fire ant, like, thing. And but just all that stuff, like everything just tied together. The whole experience of that entire show was just, you know, insane. And in Mexico is when Dunn gave me my first Schittler.
So explain the Schittler.
So I'm just standing there. Bam had just almost knocked Ape out with a tuna or something like that. He like threw it at her, and the spine was so heavy on this fish that it almost knocked her out. So everyone's like, oh, stop production.
Yeah.
So we're just standing around, and the next thing I know, and I had a beard at the time. I had like a full beard. Next thing I know, I just feel this finger swipe underneath my nose on my mustache. And I was like, what the hell? And I immediately start throwing because it just smells like poop. Right? And I turn around and I see Ryan there. Like,
he's just grinning at you.
Like,
and
laughing.
The sickest thing about him is, like, he wouldn't shower for like 10 days.
No.
So it smelled way worse than anything.
And it's not, he didn't have to put his finger in his butthole. He would just swipe the credit card in there and then put it right under your nose.
Oh, my God.
So I'm like, I start throwing up. And I run down to the water, and I start puking into the water. And he comes down, and he's like, oh, man. And I'm washing my face off and I'm just trying to get rid of it. And he comes around, and I turned around and decked him. Like, I just decked him because I was like, dude, this deserves a punch.
Yeah, you're getting hit.
And I didn't care about bruises or anything, filming. I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I was like, no. And then he was like, all right, well played.
Well, I deserve that. Yeah,
yeah. And then we went up and got a shot of tequila from the bartender.
Right. Just to try to wash the shit off your face.
It was the worst. It was one of the worst things that's ever happened to me. But then again, to me, that was also when I was like, all right, I'm accepted. Even though it's been 4 years that I'm working with it.
You're in
but
the
I was
mix.
Like, all right, I'm in.
Well, what's funny about that, like the shit thing with him putting the Schittler on you, like, it reminds me of how, like, he would go to the bathroom just to wipe.
Yep.
And he like called you over.
Yep. That was at the house. We're filming in the basement of the new house. So it's like third season, whatever. They all blend together when you do it straight through. And we had that Castle Bam or whatever. And we're filming and everything. And he's all of a sudden, he's just like, Kirk, come here. And I'm like, what, dude? He's like, go in there. And I'm like, going where? And he's pointing to like the powder room downstairs. I'm like, no. He's like, come on, it's not. Just go in there. And I walk in, and it smells like the worst shit someone has ever taken ever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my
like
god,
sweat and shit.
Oh, it smells awful. Ugh. Like awful. Like,
but worse than poop.
It is. It's like someone died.
Yeah.
It's what comes out of you when you die.
Yeah.
Like whatever's left, what came out. And I was like, this is inhuman. I'm like, where did you hide the raccoon that did this? You know what I mean? And he's looking and he's doing this smile, laughing again. And I'm like, dude, and he looks at me and he goes, that's only from wiping.
Sick,
and I was
dude.
Like, what? He goes, I didn't even shit. I just wiped. And that's what it did to that thing. I was like, oh my
that's
God.
That's so fucking disgusting.
Which reminds me of the other story of Ryan while we're on it is when before that, when we were at the first house in Glen Mills or whatever, and near Brinton Lake, and yeah. And you guys like lived in the basement for a while.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I had to go down and wake him up one time. And like, this is before I would go out with you guys. Like I'd go out with the production, but I wouldn't, you know, and I come down, I'm like, Ryan, yo, we're here, we're filming. And he like, just like, he wakes up and he goes, oh no. I'm like, what, dude? He goes, I did it again. And I'm like, what did you do? And he holds up three empty Wawa cups of cheese and pepperoni. He would get those cheese and pepperoni Wawa cups and eat the whole thing, and he ate three of them.
Oh, sick.
And he was like, I'm gonna shit so bad. Like he was just like, this, my stomach is gonna hurt so bad. And I was just, and it re like as soon as he moved the blanket, oh, it just smelled like ass and
sick.
Fucking cheddar.
Yeah,
it was
and just then like, Parliament cigarettes.
Oh yeah. But it was just, you know, I mean, in succession, it would be the pepperoni thing first, then the wipe in the bathroom, and then he gave me the shitler at the in Mexico.
Yeah, you know, and you know what's so funny? I think like just like when I think of Rye, like well, I mean, I think of him all the time about funny random stuff, but whenever I have like whenever it's like a swamp ass kind of day and you're just out and it's humid and your butt's sweating and stuff and then you just have to go to the bathroom just to wipe.
Yeah.
Like I'm always just thinking of Rye.
Every time.
You're like, man, you fucking asshole.
And,
so, you
know? And that's a hell of a thing to remember somebody by.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, 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 yeah. Like, hey man, yeah. When I think of you, I just I think of like wiping the shit out of my ass.
Yeah.
The partial shit and sweat combination that's yeah. in my ass on a hot day. That's what I think.
I think
you.
Of you. I wrote a joke dude, around yeah, it. That's it didn't how, go over well.
That's how I love that dude so much because of that. You know, like I would always talk about that. Like when he died. Like you know, it was obviously soul crushing. You and I were together when we got that news and just the fucking worst day of our lives.
It was a half mile from the house, not even.
Yeah, and I mean, awful. I don't want to go so dark on it, but it was
no.
It's horrible. I feel like 3 months of my life, I don't remember. They were a blur.
Yeah.
And I was sober
yeah.
at the time, but I just couldn't, like, function. You know, when I think back, I laugh about him, but people would be like, oh, like he was the kindest, sweetest guy. I'm bullshit. That guy was an asshole. Yeah. That guy was a total dick, and that's why I fucking loved him.
Right.
Because everybody can be like polite when they need to be, and all this. And trust me, he had a huge heart.
He did.
It was an incredible person, but. More than that, he's a sarcastic dick. He'd rub shit on your face. He, you know, he'd do those things, and you're like, that's why I love this dude.
Yeah.
That's why, because he's like the same way that I am. Like, doesn't get offended by anything, and it's just like, oh, yeah, you got me. Good. That was a good one, you know, and yeah. then like, and just so quick-witted and hilarious. And so that was always my thing. I was like, he was an asshole, but he was my asshole,
right.
you know, like, and he was your asshole, and he was all the people, all the friends, and all the fans, and all the people that loved that dude, like, he was, like, what represented that, and so for me, it was like, when you say he's like, oh, this is really sweet-hearted, good guy, it's like, yeah, but that's one little tiny sliver of him, he's just he's like this awesome human on all levels, and
he's
it's funny, so yeah.
Sweet and nice because he said hi to you, took a picture with you, and signed your thing.
Yeah, and he does
like,
that.
Oh, he's the like, nice, and it's like, yeah, he is.
When and you he'd meet fucking him. Buy you lunch, or he'd do something,
right.
and he'd like pick you up and randomly do stuff, or he'd just care about what's going on with
right.
you. And
he,
that's
like
rad.
Genuinely,
yeah,
you know, and
I mean, he'd pull up to your car with Oingo Boingo
right.
playing on the radio, and you're like, what the fuck music is this?
Yeah,
dude
and then he'd do
to?
A burnout, and
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
you know, get you covered in rubber.
Yeah, yeah,
not meanwhile. Be like, and you're like, dude, you're hitting me with rocks from the street right now. And
yeah.
Like,
uh-huh. yeah, 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 yeah. And then he's just driving off like,
yeah.
it's a dead man party. yeah. Who could ask for more? You're like, why? Why is he listening to that song?
Why
but
not?
But yeah, I mean, no, some really, really incredible memories from the Viva La Bam days.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that kind of solidified our friendship to just go on for years and years. And to a point where, I mean, shit, I was the minister at your wedding.
We made you an internet minister.
Number one internet minister. I know you and Kelly, your wife, gave me this picture that says that around the frame. Number one internet minister. And I'm like, I cherish that thing, man. We got it sitting in our living room now, and it's hilarious.
I feel bad because of how many you've done after.
I know. You kicked it off. And like, and then now it's like, I'm like, oh, man, these people really like me. Like, no, it's free. But that's why they want you to be there.
You got to start charging.
Yeah.
He's going to charge.
Yeah. So, no, it was funny, though. But to be like a wedding minister, I think that was probably the last thing I thought I'd ever be.
Well, and we really wanted you to, like, be a part of it. Like, I definitely wanted you to be a part of it. And I was running out of, like, groomsmen and, like, all that. And then it was Kelly's idea. She's like, why doesn't Rab just marry
her? Well, it was funny because you guys called me up when you proposed to her.
Yeah.
And she was on the line, like, Rab, hey, Rabby, hey, Kirk just asked me to marry him, but I told him the only way that I'll marry him is if you are the minister and perform the wedding. And I'm like, well, shit, that's a lot of pressure. I got to get her to say yes.
It was 4 minutes after.
It was probably after you wiped the tears of joy away. You call up and they're like, she still hasn't said yes.
She's putting you on the spot, buddy. I mean, I really need you to pull through.
Come on, buddy. What are you
She's
doing?
She's a keeper.
I didn't realize like the depths that you'd have to go to become a minister. And it really is just like, it's so difficult to basically go to the website, put your name in, and put your credit card information in. And then voila, you're a minister. Minister Rabbi was born.
There he is. And you did an amazing job.
Well, it's awesome, fun. And I think what's cool about it is I have done four of them now for friends. And it's so easy when it's your friend because you're like, dude, I got a lot of funny stories with these two. And it just makes sense that, you know, because sometimes you go to a wedding and it's like some priest like, and then Kyle, wait, is it Kyle? Oh, yeah. Kevin, do you take Julie as your, you know? And
it's my understanding that Kevin loves basketball.
Yeah. Oh, you don't?
Oh.
Football. One of those sports.
Soccer.
The guy likes sports.
Yeah.
He loves it.
He enjoys a team. And building a family is much like building a team.
You're pulling that out of your ass. Yeah, nobody cares about that.
How many times have you said that?
Through him, father. In him, with him, in the unity of her asshole. She hasn't given up her asshole because it's the wedding night.
It's wedding.
Mm-hmm. Those are the rules.
But yeah, and then, so I mean, and you've been, like, you came and lived with me. And, you know, we went through all that. And then, like, you moved out and I got that weird guy that came and lived with me. And then, but, like, dude, I mean, our journey has just been, you know, from that time at Shippensburg until, like, you know, you marrying us. And then now, like, we can call and talk for, you know, hours on the phone. And,
right. Like, and that's why it made sense, like, come on the podcast, because, I mean, you're a huge part of my life and the history of my life, especially, you know, obviously with all the Viva La Bam days and that stuff. And then I was thinking about, like, how, like, you know, you got into stand-up comedy and you were, like, doing that stuff. And it was, like, pushing me to be like, damn, I should film some of this hot dog casserole stuff. And he got me wanting to, like, film again and you know, because for a while after the show, I was, like, kind of off of it. Like, not that I didn't want to do it, and I totally miss it, but it was more like, I don't know where to go from here. And life got dark with drinking and drugs and all that stuff. And so I had to kind of take care of those things. But yeah, we did the hot dog thing, and then we did Borrowed Happiness years later after getting sober and doing that. And you were like a big inspiration for me getting sober, because I remember, like, we were like just miserably drinking and doing drugs and shit together, like, you know, or whatever, smoking weed and that other stuff. But then I was doing other things, and then like you kind of like all of a sudden weren't around me as much, and I'm going, man, where's Kirk been, you know? And I'm all, like, you know, sitting in a pile of my puke, And I was miserable, completely miserable. And I'm looking at you, and I bumped into you somewhere. Somehow we got together, and like you were all happy and chipper and funny. And I'm like, fucking asshole's funny, again. You know? And like, and it was difficult for me because I wasn't feeling that way. But then I saw you like kind of get life like brought back into you. You know, and obviously we partied so hard, and you you got sober and you did all that stuff. And I was like, and I look at that, and I was like, damn, that dude is like funny again. Cause you weren't funny for a little bit. No. Neither was I. No. And like,
drowned it.
Yeah.
And, you literally drowned it. You think you're funny.
Yeah. And you killed it.
But you're not.
Yeah. So then to see like, damn, this dude's actually funny as hell again. Like, what am I doing? You know? And it was like, that was what like planted that seed for me to go, damn, like I need to do something about this, you know, and kind of get back to being happy and funny and enjoying life. And so that's what I did. So I always like, you know, thank you for that, because that helped me kind of see that there was another way to live.
And do you remember when you came to me and you were like talking to me about it? And I was like, and I appreciate all those kind words, because I mean, for me, I was just trying to take care of me.
Right.
I never thought that what I was doing for myself would actually like play out into.
Well, it's the attraction, not promotion thing.
Right.
Like you weren't over there like, Rep, now here's what you need to be doing because you're not funny anymore.
I know that dude.
Yeah. Who's that, Lewis?
No, just someone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, Lewis is reading the horoscope.
Yeah. My name is Lewis. I'm going to read your horoscope.
Yeah. You're like.
That's funny.
So you're like, you know. There was none of that. You just did your thing, and I noticed. And I'm like, man,
this guy's... And I was like, Rep, are you sure you're like, yes, dude, 100% I am. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, maybe you're not. And I was like, I was actually trying to tell you. I wasn't like, yes, come on. I was like, dude, make sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing that alcoholics do is I feel like what we do is like when we're out drinking... and doing other things with friends around, surround yourself with a bunch of people that drink the way you do.
Right.
And in your mind, they drink worse than you do. So you go, oh, Kirk's worse than me. And then you go, well, Rab's worse than me. And then like Novak's worse than us. So like Bam's
I'm
worse
okay
than
us. Because,
well, I'm fine. Yeah. And everything's that way. And then when you get sober, you go like the ego sets in and you're like, I was the worst drunk there was.
Yeah.
I was way worse than you. I was way worse than you. And it's like, is that something we want to brag about? I don't know. But we all tend to do it and go, I don't think you were anywhere near what I was.
Right.
And we all have that belief. And the funny thing is because realistically, I feel like we don't truly know what the other person's going through at all. And as alcoholics or as drug addicts or any of those types of folks, like we're good at hiding things.
Yeah.
So then you manipulate these situations. I put on a fat smile. Everything seems fine. Right. Meanwhile, my mortgage is crashing. I can't afford my house. I have to do this. I'm moving in with my mom. I'm ready to shoot myself in the head, and I'm completely miserable and empty inside. But I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? Huh? Yeah. You know. But like, all that's going on, and it's just funny though. Like, we're like, I'm not as bad as him, and then when you get sober, I'm way worse than you were.
It is. It's a flip.
But yeah.
That. Yeah. And the thing is that you. Like, I mean, it's not cliche or whatever, but it's like each person's path is their own path, and it doesn't matter. Like, some people are like, oh, no, I'm full-blown alcoholic. Like, and you're like, dude, you're like 15.
You know what I mean? Right.
You're like, you know.
And I always hate that, though, because the old head will be, I spilled more beer than you even drank.
And it's like, shut the fuck up, dude. Right. You're like, it's
like. You're a fucking accountant. You had a couple beers after work every day, and then you're going to judge me?
Right.
You don't know what the fuck I've done in my life, dude.
Right. And,
you know?
And even if you only drank three times a week, if it was enough for you to self-reflect and look at yourself, it's enough for you to self-reflect and look at yourself.
Yeah.
That's all that matters is that you're there trying to better yourself.
Right.
You know, and some people, you know, you can't judge other people's motivations for whatever, but it's like, I'd be like, well, dude, I mean, I was pretty bad. And then like you were like, no, dude, I'm fucking bad. Like, and then you started telling me shit that I had no idea you were doing.
And well, and like, that's the thing. Like there's all this hidden shit. It's like, you think you know your close friends, and then I'm like, but Kirk, like, remember I didn't see you for 3 months? Yeah. I was on tour for 3 months doing cocaine every fucking day.
I woke up in a parking lot.
Yeah, like, wrapped woke up in a parking lot wrapped in a fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's another story. Like, there's so many of those. I woke up in a family's home.
Yes.
Sleeping in the parents' bed. Like, that's the way I drank. That's the way, and like I said, just doing coke, trying to get on the radio so I could talk. And everyone's like, you hated coke. I'm like, that's what I told you.
Right.
But that's not what I was doing.
Right.
In one breath, I'm like, this shit's terrible. You know, and then like sniffing it all and then taking pills.
While I got to get rid of all
whenever
this.
Whenever I was drinking, it would be like, oh, what's that pill you got? Let me get that.
Yeah,
let me get
that. I had no idea about
that. And it's like, any of that.
Right.
And then I don't even remember. Because I'm blacked out, and then I'm like, holy shit, oh yeah, I do remember some Xanax happening, I do remember ecstasy in the middle of that, and then I remember this, like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know, and that's what it was for me, is that all bets were off when I drank, and there'd be long periods of time for me drinking, and I remember I had shared this story before, but there was a lady that was like managing CKY, and she was like a friend of mine. And I'm like, she's like, dude, Rab, like, it's kind of getting out of hand. I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. I'm not hardly drinking at all. And she's like, you drank 5 days this week. I'm like, well, yeah. I mean,
it's not seven.
Because, like, 2 days felt like an eternity.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm fucking good.
Yeah.
And it's like, but I didn't have a beer 5 days a week.
So right.
I blacked out fucking drunk, drugs, whatever, 5 days that week.
Yeah.
You know, and then as it becomes, then you go, oh, well, drinking's getting real hard for me right now, so I'm only gonna black out a few days, and then I'm gonna smoke weed all day and take pills, and then that's cool, right?
That fixes my drinking, right?
Like, I'm not that bad, right? And then it's like, but then you're like, well, let's go get a beer, and it's like, okay, get a beer, turns into like, you're back at home, like, scrambling, like, dude, I know that there's like a Bartles and James wine cooler in the one bottom shelf. Let's grab it, you know? Like, let's see, you think if I snort it, it'll get me more fucked up? You know, and that's it. But it's funny because when you hang out with a bunch of addicts, alcoholics, everybody's like, oh, I didn't think you were that bad.
Right.
And even some of my friends that are still drinking and doing drugs and probably alcoholically and addictively, they'll be like, oh, I didn't even notice. Oh, you were that bad? Like, I didn't notice. It's like, yeah, you didn't notice because then you have to notice.
Yeah.
Then you have to notice what you're doing.
Then you
got to
look at you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And no one wants to look at
that. Yeah, and that's hard.
But then it takes some time to, once you stop doing all that crap, to get back to being you again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's like with you saying like, oh, I saw this dude and you were like, you know, you were laughing and having fun and you were like funny again. And it's like, and then you stopped and you go through your beginning phases and it's like, and then you became you again. You know what I mean? And you're like, cause like part of it for me anyway was like well, who am I? I was this funny guy in high school. I did all this stuff. I was always doing stand up for my friends, like, you know, either my own shit or impersonating people or whatever. And then, you know, you just start drinking in high school and then it just progresses. Luckily for me, it stopped.
Yeah.
Before I killed myself or before I became like successful and 50 and just angry with my entire life, you know? Yeah. And then you're like, well, for a brief moment, which was probably a year, but it's like, it feels like a brief moment. I was like, well, who am I?
Yeah.
Like, if that wasn't me, that was like drinking me. And it's like, no, dude, that was you.
Right.
Like, that was you. Like, you're still you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now like it's even more liberating because I give even less fucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, look, I know who I am. You know, like, I can do my own fucking thing. Like,
yeah.
And I only wish for anybody that they can just get to the point where you give zero fucks. Not to the point where you're walking around looking like a shithead.
Yeah.
But like where you take care of yourself. You're confident in your own abilities and your own lane and how you live your life.
And I think that's kind of what it is. It's not that you don't care. It's that you're confident.
Yeah.
Like everybody cares a little bit or else you're a sociopath.
Right.
But you like are confident in what you're doing and you're like, dude, I'm back to me. And that was something that was huge that my brother said to me, you know, during the crazy days, because Hannah like said something to him and was like, dude, you need to talk to your brother. Like, he's like off the rails, you know? And my brother came to me and was just like, dude, like, I don't get like what's going on, whatever. And I like, I had this belief that I wasn't going to be funny or interesting or any of that stuff unless I was drunk and high.
Right.
And, you know, and obviously I had a friend that, like, said that to me. And,
right.
And so it was like, well, we thought he was a friend. But but anyway, it was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, look, you're not funny unless you're drunk or
right.
this and that. And you're like, you know, you have low self-esteem, so you're thinking, oh, maybe that's the truth, you know. And that was something my brother said to me. It was like, dude, like, I don't know why you're drinking this hard or why you're doing this stuff. Like, you're a funny dude and you're creative and you have all these things without any of that.
Right.
You know that, right? And there was like this moment of like not knowing that.
Right.
Of not feeling like it wasn't fueled by that.
Well, it's the insecurity.
Right. And then that's part of it too. When you get sober, you're like, well, there goes my funny.
Yeah.
I'm not funny anymore. I'm not going to be interesting. I'm not a good time to be around. I got, you know, and like, and that's what happens.
I love
happens.
Your first sober voice.
Yeah.
Same guy that's like, come here, man. This is what you got to do.
Yeah. So it is like just this weird journey through like that, like learning who you are again, knowing that you can be that. That you are still, you know, crazy in the head, and like that you are funny. You still have a fucked up sense of humor. You still have all those things. It's just getting away from the chemicals and getting to your normal way of living.
Cold Darling, I was sober.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I had been, I think I was like a year and a half sober when Cold Darling was born. And we were doing all that. And that actually leads me into this part of my life was when we went to Cherry Hill. And did the PJ Wheelahan, like you were doing a bikini contest.
Yeah.
And you were like, you got to dress up as Cold Darling and come with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, Rabs himself has this name. He's been asked to come here, but he's asking me to dress up as this dude. And and we had done it a couple times. And then I call my buddy who I used to work in production with, who's now a Cherry Hill cop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I'm at PJ Wheelahan's in Cherry Hill. And he's like, all right, I'll be right over. And he like pulls up in his cop car and I see him. And like, I look down at my Cold Darling outfit and then I like look at him in that car. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. I was like, I think I'm going to try that. Like what he was doing. And I applied to the academy the next day.
Wow. Yeah. That's what it was.
That's what it was.
Cold Darling is responsible for you being a police officer.
It really is. And it's because I was working at Starbucks still.
Yeah.
I was like looking at this cafe across the street. Like I could own my own cafe. Why am I working for fucking Starbucks? Like I'm a smart enough guy. Like I have entrepreneurial stuff.
You're just
like,
building up your life again. Through getting sober.
And dude, Starbucks was one of the best things ever too. You know what I mean? Like I said, I wouldn't change like anything really. I mean, there's a few things, but it was that day. Like I'd worked for Starbucks for like 2.5 years. And then I like looked down and I looked at John and I was like, all right. And at that night, I put in the application online for the academy, and then I was like 3 months later, I was in the academy.
I put
myself through the police academy.
Damn, that's crazy.
While working at Starbucks. And it's nothing against Cold Darling.
Yeah.
Because some people, when I tell that story, they're like, yeah, but dude, you were like judging a bikini contest and PJ Williams with Rap himself. And I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't.
Right. There's always that. It was great. I mean, my bottom, I was covered in naked women with a bunch of drugs and they were doing shots off of me and I was just doing all
that. And that's some people's pinnacle.
Yeah. And I was like, and that was my bottom. Dude. Yeah. That was awful.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm some monkey that people were like, oh, be out here, be rapping myself, do these drugs. I'm like, I'm killing myself.
Yeah.
You got, I don't even know who the fuck you are.
Right.
You know, and
getting hepatitis.
I got a clean bill of health, people.
That is not actual.
Yeah. But no.
Clean bill of health.
What's funny is like, the Cold Darling thing, and that you know they became a cop, and I went on and became a camera guy, and I'm out like working on this commercial, and this guy. This buddy of ours that was a camera guy back in the day with the Viva La Bam stuff comes up and he's like, hey man, like, Rab, like, how's it going? He's like, yo, do I got it right? I hear that Bongwater is a cop?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Bongwater? Like, that's where I learned that was your nickname or something. And he's then there's telling there's some story that you showed up and you had all the shaggy hair and the guy,
2 hours late.
The director or AD or somebody called you Bongwater.
No, it was the talent.
Oh, the talent.
The host.
Yeah.
We were shooting a wraparounds for a show that was on we were shooting like the in and outs of the producer on this or of the host on the set for some Food Network show or something.
Yeah.
Where he's like, and now we're going to go to Georgia where we see, you know, Susan doing this. And yeah, there's this dude and he thought he was like the shit. And I worked with him a bunch after that and he always thought it was shit. And I'm like, dude, you're a host on a Food Network
show.
Like, and you're not even like, they're not taking you on location. Like, you're in this studio. Like, get off your high horse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I quit being a bar manager, and I went out the night before I started this new job and got hammered and showed up 2 hours late with like donuts and coffee, like when it's supposed to be there at like 5 a.m.
Yeah, like production is not a 1 minute late, let alone 2 hours. Yeah. You got to be 15, 20 minutes early.
Thank God the boss was my mom's good friend and she gave me like a pass. Like any other production house that I would have been in. Yeah, I probably would have worked that day. They would have probably paid me right then and said, thanks, nice knowing you.
Yeah, I had that happen to me before.
You know?
I showed up late because I worked a 21-hour day and then I had a call time like 3 hours after that for this other show. And I was like, oh, I'll just take a quick nap. And I just slept right through and then I got there like an hour late and they like, the producer lady was such a bitch the whole day. And like, I'm like, dude, just either send me home or stop being a bitch.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then like, she just bitchy the whole day. And then by the end of it, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we can't bring you back. I was supposed to have the job for like 6 months or something. And I was like, eh, whatever, cool.
Yeah.
And then it actually worked out in my benefit because I got a lot better job after that.
Right.
Started
as is life with those things. But, and then, I mean, and then I did that, you know, but that, yeah, when he walked up to you and said,
well,
did I hear this right?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, he's doing well. He's a police officer, and it's funny because I mean, I think during the days of Jackass Viva La Bam, we knew a lot of cops in our area.
Yeah,
I mean, I have stories where, like, you know, I would be like at the lake filming something, and I'd have bags of weed and all this shit, and like, cop would come up and be like, oh, Rab, dude, come on, put that shit away,
right.
You know, and like, and I'm like, damn, like, you know, now that you're above the law, but there's this level of like, because you're buds with them, they like, kind of
that respect went outside
you a more like, you know, like, oh, dickhead, just put that away,
cause right,
I can't be seen with you having that,
right, and then you're like, I'll get in trouble,
all right,
yeah.
And but it was funny, so like, I had known cops on a different level than just like a, oh, they're out to fuck everybody over,
right,
you know. And and so I had a bunch of friends that were cops, and then when you became a cop, I was like, damn, this is like an awesome thing for your life, because you know, you have your kids and you needed to like kind of just take that next step into a new direction. And And it was really cool. And I mean, you were this hardcore military academy dude that, like, you know, like, would, it was like the leader of the squad or whatever. And you did all that, you know. So that was, it made sense that you went that direction.
Yeah. I had it in, I loved military school. I mean, I got sent there for partying too much. And then I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Like, and I excelled there. And then, you know, Liam was born when I was 20. You know, so I couldn't really go. I didn't want to go into the military and miss 8 years of his life. You know what I mean? So my life took a different path. But then the police thing was always in the back of my mind. I never landed any major, you know, felonies or misdemeanors along the way. So
I was
high fives. I was able to do it. So I put in and I did it. And then, and now it's just been, you know, and I still don't think like I'm not. Like, I'm a cop. That's like, I show up to work and I do police work. And I'm like, I know I'm pretty good at it, right?
Yeah.
But I have this other perspective where I can help people. And the guys I work with and girls are really, like, fantastic. Like, we don't have, I mean, we have 140-some people. And obviously, when you have that many people, you're going to have dickheads. It's just,
right,
population. That's
guaranteed.
Just going to happen.
Yeah,
doesn't matter if you're a plumber, if you're in a cubicle, if you're whatever, if there's 140 people working somewhere, you're going to have one or two dickheads in the group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. But I feel that I can bring a different, I bring like this different perspective with my life experiences into the job, a little more empathy than normal, but then I'm human. You know, there's days where I'm like, nah, fuck you, dude. You know, like, I'm not going to, out of bounds on anything, but it's like I have a little less patience.
You're you know not what as, I mean? As lenient or whatever. And like, I think what's cool about you is you told me, like, you know, when there are people that are breaking the law and doing things like that, there's a lot more of like, you know, educating them on what's happening and what they're doing, and kind of like, yo, you're gonna really screw up your life, and maybe, you know, maybe you could take this moment
to see that this is what's happening, and just a little bit of more compassion and talking with somebody
right.
puts them in a position where they think about that for a second. Even if they don't think about it right then, they might think about it down the line. And instead of like it being like, nope, you're broke the law, you're an asshole, get handcuffed, you're going to jail. Cause like, it's like rubbing a dog's shit in it, or nose in its shit, like after a whole day of work. Like the dog took the shit in the morning, and then you come home and you rub its nose in the shit in the afternoon. It's like, what the fuck did I do?
Right.
It's like that mentality of like, dude, if you just handcuff someone, throw them down, do this, like the person's like not getting it.
Right.
But obviously. Then if you talk to them for a moment, because a lot of times I think when you're breaking the law or when you're doing illegal things, I did a lot of illegal things. I got arrested a bunch of times. And I think when you're doing that, it's like, you know, no one's really taking a moment to like see where you're at, like what's right. going on here.
Right.
You know,
and I get to take that time. I get sometimes if I'm transporting the person, I get that car ride.
Yeah.
Where I can talk to them. And now my ego is like, you know, I'm dropping all this knowledge on you. Like, you know, maybe. But honestly, I just try to be as honest with the person. But don't get me wrong. Like, and until you're in the handcuffs. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, I'll protect myself. Like, I you know, but if you're compliant, you know what I mean? Like, but it's like, if we have to, we have to. Like, but then that's the thing is like, the job can go literally from 0 to 4,000 in the matter of less than a second, right? Like, you're standing there talking to somebody and then the fight's on, right?
Yeah.
And now, or they're running or something and you know that they're the bad guy. This like quote unquote bad guy. But then once they're in handcuffs, what a lot of guys have a problem with, which I find not to be too difficult, is you got to bring yourself back down.
Yeah.
So that you're like, all right, it's over. We got them. They're in, you know what I mean? Like now I can start talking. Now we're human beings, man. Like we're all like, we're on the same team. You know what I mean? Like we're all human beings in this. And now I'm going to be like, what's going on, dude? Like what, drugs? Is this because of drugs? Is this because, like, what do you, like, you need money? Is this because this is all you know? Like, why, you know, why are you doing this stuff? And sometimes they're dickheads and they just lie to you the whole time and they don't do that. And sometimes they're human beings back to you. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can't tell you, like, I don't know how many times I've had people that we're dealing with that are either arrested or, you know, not arrested, but could be arrested or whatever. And we're talking to them and they're like, you're cool, man. Like, you're cool. Like,
once the trust is there, they'll open up to
right.
you a little
bit. But it's really hard to get past that uniform and talk to somebody. Like, but luckily, I can talk to people. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it's just a matter of taking the time. And sometimes, if I know I'm not getting anywhere, I don't waste my breath.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if it can be received, and if it's... I've been doing this 7 years. If there's one person in that 7 years where I said something that helped change them, I'm fine with it. You know what I mean? I have another 23 years to go or whatever it is, or, you know, 18 years to go or whatever. Yeah. If in that time, even if I didn't touch anybody these 7 years, if I didn't get through to anybody, if I have 18 more years to get through to one person in my whole career, like, to me, it'd be worth it just getting through to one person.
Yeah. Well, speaking of getting through, how did you get through the door on some of these? Like, I wanted to hear... Like, wasn't there some guy with, like, a trident or something? Like, I wanted to hear some of these crazy stories of, like, if you're allowed to talk about
it. I can talk about it. I just won't say names. What we deal with a lot is...
Didn't you have to get through, like, there was some door that you were outside and some guy had a... I don't know. I want to hear that trident.
So what we have to deal a lot with is mental health consumers is what we call them. People with like, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar, all that kind of stuff. So we get called to this nice, quiet, really rich area of town. And I go up to the house and the lady says, there was a man on my front lawn yelling into my kitchen window. And it was like 5 a.m. and saying how some guy, Gary, owes him $5 million. And if he doesn't get the money, he's going to burn my house down. And I'm like, she's like, and my husband's away. And I'm just concerned. And she's like, I think it's the neighbor's kid. And I was like, okay. So we go across the street and I like knock on the door at the neighbor's house and who is it? I'm like, hey man, it's the police. We just want to go away. And I'm like, nah, dude, we just got to talk to you real quick. Like, were you over at your neighbor's house? Yeah, Gary owes me $5 million. And if I don't get that money, I'm going to burn his ass to the ground. I'm like, well, you can't say stuff like that, dude. Just open the door. Let's talk. Well, what if I come out there with a baseball bat? That's what he goes to that. I'm like, well, we don't want that. So now we kind of back away from the door a little bit.
Yeah.
And I like get on, I'm like, call inside. So the county calls inside the house. And the dad comes down the steps. right? And I'm like, oh, okay, the parents are home. And he opens the door. He's like, what's going on? And the kid's like 28, right? Like late 20s. And yeah, that's right around where people break schizophrenic-wise. It's like mid to late 20s, is like sometimes early 20s. And I say, well, your son, I think, was across the street yelling. And he just, he like drops in like disbelief. And he just goes, I can't deal with it anymore. And what happened was, is like, this is a really wealthy family, and this kid has never gone. He's been going to a psychiatrist, and it hasn't been helping. And the parents are still dealing with him being like schizophrenic in the house. Like, and the kid comes down the steps halfway, and he goes, I have proof that, you know, like, he's stolen $5 million from me, and I have it out of my PayPal account, and did it. And I was like, you have $5 million in your PayPal account?
Damn.
I was like, where'd you get that money? He's like, he is the head of this department at this place, you know, and he's like naming all this stuff that his dad is. And I'm like, okay, I can see how he would have that money. I said, but how are you, like, you know, how is he stealing? And so logic eludes them when you start bringing logic in. So long story short, that he goes upstairs to get this evidence and locks himself in his room, right?
Yeah.
And now he's threatened us with a baseball bat. He's threatened, he's been over at the neighbor's house, threatened to burn the house down. So he is coming with us, right? He's going to the mental health part of it, right? So at this point, he's coming with us. So now we're outside his room in the house upstairs, and the parents are like, whatever you got to do, right? Just do whatever you got to do. And then he's like, they can't take me without a warrant. They can't take me without a warrant. So my other buddy goes and grabs a piece of paper. And he's like, I have it right here. And then he's like, Dad, did they have a warrant? And he goes, yeah, they have a warrant. And he goes, what color's the paper? And he goes, white. And he goes, that's a lie. Your copy will be pink or yellow. And I was like, oh, shit, he might be right about that. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, goddamn, this kid's smart, right? And I was like, oh, all right. And I was like, look, you know, Greg, whatever his name is, I forget. I'm like, you got to come out. Like, you got to come out now or we're coming in. And now this is a Monday morning at 5 a.m. after we work 3 night works in a row of 12-hour shifts. This shit always happens the last hour that you're working after working 3 12-hour shifts in a row, right?
Yeah.
So now we're going into, like, overtime. It's like 7 a.m. Like, the new guys are coming out on the street and we're dealing with this kid. And I'm like, we're going in to get him, right?
Yeah.
So I have someone around that door. I have someone around, I'm at this door. And a little rule of thumb for anyone out there, if you want to kick a door open, don't do it like in the movies where you kick straight ahead and you just do a straight kick at the thing. You want to horse kick that thing.
Oh, you want
to get behind it and kick backwards. Because if it doesn't give, you're not breaking your leg or your knee. Like, you want to horse kick that thing. Unless you, like, you know, bench or, you know, squat press 5,000 pounds and you know you're going to kick through anything. So anyway, we're all standing there. I'm like, all right, you're on gun. You're on taser. You got to be ready just because we don't know what's behind that door, right? So we kick the door open, and I have my taser out. And then the other guys come through the other door. And my one partner next to me, he had his gun out. And the kid is standing there. He's got a Leatherman in one hand with the saw and the knife open. So, I don't even think you could stab anybody with that because the round part of the saw.
Yeah.
And in his other hand, he's holding a fucking trident. Like a full-on fishing, like Neptune, like, trident with like, 5-inch barbs.
Damn.
They got a thing. So now it raises to that level of, like, okay, technically we could shoot this kid. But then again, we just broke into his room. You know what I mean? So there's a whirlwind of things. So the kid with the gun, I just put my hand out and I stop him. And I just go, taser, taser. And I hit him with the taser, right?
Yeah.
And your adrenaline's through the roof, right? And the kid's, and he's on the ground. Now, the taser ride is 5 seconds on ours, right?
Yeah.
So you hit it, you let go. It goes for 5 seconds no matter what. So he's like, on the ground. And I'm like standing there and I'm like, man, this is longer than 5 seconds. And I look and I'm squeezing the trigger still. And I was like, oh, and I like let go. And he was like, ah, and he came out of it. And then we didn't know where the trident or the knife was. And he like started moving again. So I just hit him again. And he's like, okay. I give up.
Yeah.
And then we,
don't tase me, bro.
Yeah. Basically he's like, dude, and I've been tased and I felt it. You know, it's no joke. And, he snapped out of it. He like snapped his whole like little break that he was having with the $5 million and all that stuff. He snapped out of it like that. And I was like, wow, electroshock therapy actually works, right?
Yeah.
And he stands up and I'm like, hey, you know, Gary, you all right, bud? Like, you cool? Because he's in handcuffs now. We have the stuff. One probe hit him right above the belly button. The other one hit him right in the dick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like right in
man.
But it didn't hit like... It didn't, like, go into... It just hit him in the fly area and stuck in his jeans.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But the arc went into his, you know, and then And it's like, hey, man, it's a dynamic situation. You know what I mean? It's not perfect. None of it's perfect.
Don't get shot in the dick with a taser.
Try not to get shot in the dick with a taser. But then, you know, and he goes, I'm really sorry, guys. He's, like, immediately remorseful. And he goes, I should have respected the badge.
That's awesome.
And I should have respected the taser.
This is like deep thoughts, like reflection immediately. Yeah.
And then we just took him off to the thing, got him the help that he needed, and then he's, you know, they agreed to take him to another facility, and we haven't had a dealing with that kid since, you know. But like
that's hilarious.
A trident.
Yeah,
you know?
Coming out with a trident. Should have respected the badge.
Yeah.
And well, we respected the trident, and that's why we had to tase you.
That's why we had to tase.
Well, that's funny, man. No, I was thinking, man, it's been awesome having you out and talking, and we could go on for days just talking about funny stuff, police stories, old stories, all that stuff. I'm just thinking we need to get the band back together.
We do.
Get Cult Darling Band back together.
I'll tell you what, right now, I'll put it. What should I set the limit at for Twitter followers?
Because it's going to explode.
No, if I say, if you go to @ColtDarling on Twitter, right? And we hit, 500? If I say we get 500, or should I say 1,000? 500 to start?
500 followers.
500, we'll make a new song.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
And then every incremental after that, we'll set it up. But I mean, I've written the songs. They're there.
Yeah, they're there.
I mean, they're in the soul and heart of it all.
Oh, man. So that's awesome. Okay. @ColtDarling, Twitter @ColtDarling, give us 500 followers and we'll make a new Cult Darling song. I'm going to put a bunch of the old songs up on YouTube and then we'll put this episode up on YouTube as well. And follow us on Twitter @ChrisRab. Follow us on Instagram @Rab_himself. Also @BathroomBreakPodcast. On YouTube, Rab Himself Videos. We'll have a bunch of videos. We'll have all the podcasts. We're on SoundCloud as well. And man, it's just been fun talking with you. And thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Love you, man.
I love you, boy.
Yeah.
All right. Later.
See ya. I'm gonna butter my thumb. Gonna butter my thumb. Butter my thumb. Gonna butter my thumb. Butter my thumb. Yeah, I'm gonna butter my thumb. I'll butter my thumb and my other one. Gonna butter my thumbs. Wake up in the morning, get that butter out of the fridge. Gonna set it on the counter and just let it get real soft. Cause later that evening, baby, I'm planning on doing things to you that I don't know that I should do. Show me your dove now, baby.
water.